This is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It's one thing I love about doing this show. We get a little pop culture, we'll be a little funny, we'll try to be bringing back some things, but then we get down to the news of the day. D'Amico Ryans has been hired to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. Joe Blank joins us to talk about this and the optimism surrounding this hire in particular. We talked about the Broncos and their hiring of Sean Payton, and many believe the Broncos did actively pursue Ryans, but Ryans didn't want him. He wanted to go to Houston, and the Texans have the number two pick in April's draft. Hello, Joel. Thanks for joining us on a Progressive Guest Line. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, the optimism meter. Where is it right now with D'Amico Ryans returning to Houston, played there, is a coach there? What's the optimism meter reading?
Well, Tony, I'll tell you this. He won the press conference, but we've seen other coaches do that in the past. But the fact that this is an ex-player, this is someone that the people that are just like the common average fan watching could get excited about, and the fact that they knew he was one of the hot names, if not the hottest name other than Sean Payton on the coaching circuit, and they got him, as opposed to a year ago when coaches were turning down interviews with the Texans and no one wanted to come here. The enthusiasm is basically at an all-time high because you had a room full of his ex-players led by Andre Johnson and had J.J. Watt tweeting about just the overall got-the-right-guy excitement. He still has to have a roster to be able to coach, and they're still a long way from that. But I think for the day, for the organization where it's hyper-important, from an image standpoint, that they start doing things the right way, this was a huge win for the Houston Texans.
From the standpoint of the fan base, and they like the hire, the organization likes the hire, I know Ryan's played there, that's the team that drafted him, and he probably is very super familiar with the play, glad to be back home, if you will. But what's the appeal from the – what does he see in the Texans that makes it attractive than other places like Arizona and Denver?
Well, I'll tell you this, because we've had the conversation on my show, and the bottom line is, when you have the draft capital that the Texans have stacked up because of the Watson trade and because of just being so bad for the last 3 years, and then you talk about five picks in the first three rounds, and then you talk about all of their picks, which they hadn't had in quite a while, and then you look at the fact that they have money under the salary cap that they're going to be able to stack and rack and use whichever way they want after some really bad contracts finally expired that Bill O'Brien had executed, there's a lot of excitement if you're D'Amico Ryans, because if you look at the Denver situation, it's what can you get out of Russ and how much does he have left? And no right. matter what, you're 160 mil in guaranteed. You're probably more than that on the hook. You know that it was a disaster last year. You know, you gave up draft capital to get him. So there's more questions than there are immediate answers for you to be able to put your stamp on the franchise. And with Arizona, you saw J.J. Watt retire. They're trying to trade DeAndre Hopkins. Kyler Murray may be out half the year. And it's a situation where that's one where they had a short window, and it looks like it's kind of already started to close. And you've got issues with your quarterback regardless in terms of the way he handles himself on a daily basis. I think because of those factors and the fact that he played here and his family so hyper important, and this was a city that his wife really liked and wanted to come back to, it just made perfect sense, and it was the perfect connection.
Is there any upside to anything that he's inheriting? Is there anything that is a bright spot, or is he rebuilding the entire thing?
Oh, no, there's some bright spots. Look, you know, the first year that Nick Caserio took over as general manager, he didn't start picking until the third round, and there wasn't a whole lot to choose from, so there weren't a lot of impact players. Last year, he had a really good draft. There are question marks about his two first-round picks because he drafted a guard early, and he also took Stingley instead of Sauce Gardner. But Stingley was stuck in a cover two most of the year and never got to show off his man-to-man skills. But I think after you get to the first round and you look at guys like a Jalen Petrie in the secondary, who basically was phenomenal at safety, and you look at John Metchie, who's an incomplete, but if he comes back, you could get yourself an immediate wide receiver. But a Christian Harris, a linebacker from Alabama, and then honestly in the fourth round to get your best offensive player in Damian Pierce as a running back. The draft was really good. So you have some pieces to work with young players. And that's got to be encouraging, especially because the defensive guys that are there that you can work with, like Petrie and Harris, fall right into that category where D'Amico can make them better. So I think the cupboard wasn't completely bare. It's still a lot of groceries to be bought and packed in. But I think that the signs are pointing upward for the first time in a long time for the roster, for the team, and for the coaching staff.
How do we process, those of us outside of Houston, how do we process the last two hires, the David Culley and Lovie Smith? I mean, these, whether they're holding a job or just guys that will be promoted like Lovie Smith, it's still one of 32 jobs in the world, whether you're going to, whether your future is bright or not. How do we make it from the organization standpoint that they basically got two guys who got 1 year and said, get out of here?
Yeah, it's hard to try to justify any of it. David Culley was a guy no one else was going to hire. David Culley was a guy that 16, 17 years in had never even been a coordinator. And suddenly he became a guy they couldn't let get out of the building and they had to sign. And I think part of it is the Nick Caserio plan as it relates to Culley when this whole thing started was, look, I've got such a cavernous hole to dig out of from Bill O'Brien that I just need a bridge guy that's a good guy, that's a rah-rah locker room guy and a culture guy for the first couple of years until we take that first step. Then I'll get a better coach. He thought that Culley would be here a couple of years, but in short order, it became very obvious. Culley wasn't capable of being a head coach in this league, short-term, long-term, or otherwise. Couldn't do anything from clock management to game management. It was much like Nathaniel Hackett was in Denver. So you had to move on. Now, the crazy thing was, as crazy as it was that they hired Lovie Smith, who was their defensive coordinator, but he wasn't really on their interview list or the finalist list, and everybody seems to be in the consensus that it was a knee-jerk after the Flores lawsuit with the league. But the scarier thing would have been, what would have happened had the Flores lawsuit not come up? Because that's where Josh McCown's name was front and center as a finalist, who had never coached in college, never coached in pro, was coaching in high school, and his claim to fame for NFL resume was a backup quarterback for about 14 years. Mm-hmm. And they were dead set serious that that was the guy that they were going to hire, because at the time, Jack Easterby, who made the Texans in part the laughingstock of this league, believed in his beliefs, believed in the fact that this guy was an up-and-coming coach in the making, and they were just going to take Jack for his word, and they were going to give this guy the head coaching job. So they avoided one. But at the end of the day, it still made him look really bad because of the other that they hired in his place in Lovie. And now two coaches in 2 years, you knew they couldn't afford to get it wrong. That's why I think as much as DeMeco fits all the bill, fits the bill and checks all the boxes as a coach, the extra added benefit for the organization is, as a beloved player for this team and a guy that said he was coming home because he was drafted here, it was a win-win that they had to have.
Yeah, I get the feeling that this is not a guy that's, you know, he's going to get room to grow. He's going to get room to build this. He's going to get room to build it in his own image. And I know Culley didn't work out and Smith the same thing. But if I was those guys, they'd be like, well, I never felt that way. I never got that opportunity. I was out 1 year. This guy, it feels like he's given this blank sheet, go build it, take a while to build it, make sure we get it all correct, that those two guys didn't get.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. But I think that he and his agent were smart, too, in realizing he got a 6-year deal and he got a lot of money, because you use that to your advantage and you say, look, you've completely tripped over yourself the last 2 years. We're not going to let you trip over our guy. This is his first chance, and you never know when you get a second chance. So the bottom line is, if you want him and he wants you, you better make it worth his while, or he's got other teams that he can choose from. And that's why I think, whether you believe Denver tried to get him the last day before the deal was done or not, You've got to believe that after they had the second meeting, the Texans were already convinced he was their guy. But the agent probably stepped in and said, well, that's great, but until you make it to where we feel comfortable that we're not going to be the third coach in 3 years or be in the same type situation, we're not going to sign on the dotted line. And I think that's why you saw a little delay. And that's why now DeMeco can come in and say, I've got 6 years. I don't have to do this with everybody looking over my shoulder and thinking it's got to happen overnight. And now I can take the time to do the things that I feel necessary to make this a long-term, sustainable winning program, not just a one-and-done, fly-by-night, trying to save the general manager's rear end.
This is a larger question here, Joel. Joel Blank joining us here on Sports Map Radio. Larger picture here. The image of this team, what it went through, what it had to fight against, the Deshaun Watson stuff, Bill O'Brien, all of that, losing seasons, firing two coaches in 2 years. What is the sort of image of this team now, and is DeMeco Ryan supposed to fix that?
Tony, this is the beginning of the reset button that was pushed the minute that they had the press conference to announce that they had fired Lovie Smith, because this was a laughingstock of a franchise locally and nationally. This was an embarrassment of a franchise across all of professional sports. This was, as you mentioned, from the Deshaun Watson debacle in many different ways, both on and off the field. The Bill O'Brien losing the 20-point lead against Kansas City and a chance to go to their first ever conference championship by doing just ridiculous play call after ridiculous play call, then trading away the best receiver in football for a second-round pick and a bowl of soup. And you can go on. Then this, Jack, you hired a team chaplain to be your vice president of football, and within a few months' time, he was running the entire organization because he had the owner around his little finger. It was just such an embarrassment, and there were so many questions. Like when we were just talking about Lovie Smith, we still don't know to this day if Caserio hired him or somebody else did. And in all these situations I mentioned to you, we're not sure Cal McNair, the owner, knew of any of all or all of what they were doing. So the day they fired Lovie Smith, the last year when they had fired Cully, they waited 4 days to fire him. They didn't announce any candidates, and they decided to move on slowly and very under the radar. This time, they announced it the first day they could. They had five candidates that were all respected lined up, and the owner came out and said he's going to be transparent. So they're trying to definitely press the reset button.
Thank you, Joel. Appreciate it. Always good to have you on, my friend. Thank you so much.